administrator and who wasn't going to brew up a storm for them in the way that, say, General Patton brewed storms for his political masters. And I think that George Randolph Perks was not only a little old for, by British standards, for a command job.
Same age as Square.
Same age as Square? Well, that doesn't stand hold water then, does it? I think that he would be more known and more trusted by the senior politicians who knew him well from his time as CGS in Ottawa.
Yeah, that I would agree with you 100%. Because in Ottawa, as he was, they would get to know him, he would get to know them far better than Perks would be
over
in England and all the rest of
that's
it.
That's right.
And I believe, too, as former commandant of RMC, he would get to know the military masters better. They would
well
be
connected.
Yeah, without a doubt. He was well connected, yeah. Well, now, you get to Army headquarters at what time? This is the spring, the early spring of
1944,
I think.
44, yeah.
Yeah.
So I wasn't there very long when I was at Army headquarters when I was out walking one night with a fellow and aircraft were flying over and he said, I shouldn't tell you, but that's for real. And I said, what do you mean? He said, tomorrow morning is D-Day. He was a fellow who was in the know. And I can remember the two of us, he was a minister's son, the two of us walked up the hill to a little old church and tried to get in to say a prayer. But the church was locked, and we came back down again. And the next morning was D-Day. And less than a month after that, as I mentioned laughingly, I was detailed to accompany the Army commander's caravan and get it ashore and safely located in harbor in Normandy. And so I was part of the advance party. And as soon as we got it ashore, there wasn't really very much to do. So I went up to see my friend Ronnie Morton and said, hey, would you like an officer? And he said he sure would. He needed them. He'd lost a lot.
Now, Morton was CO.
Morton was the CO of the Garys.
Yeah.
X had been 2IC of the Strathconas.
Yeah.
Long time Strathcona.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple of weeks later, I was moved from the Army headquarters back to regimental duty.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned over lunch, I was put in charge of B echelon, which is the, well, you would know well, the rearmost of the echelons. And
I didn't know that would have a, what rank would you be?
Captain.
Still captain.
I'd been a major while I was home and I lost it to come back overseas.
Yeah.
So I was a captain.
Well, then when you went up to the, you don't remember the date, do you, by any chance, when you went to the Fort Garry's? Probably July,
August,
I would think.
August, I would think. Late July or early August.
Well, totalized when that was on the night of the 7th, 8th of August, if that helps.
I would have been there about a week before then. So
yeah.
I would say I must have been late July when I went to them.
Yeah. And you'd go to the area roughly south of Caen.
Immediately south of Caen,
yeah.
Yes.
Cornell's.
Not quite that far, as I recall.
Yeah.
It was virtually on the outskirts of Caen.
Yeah.
Remember, I found this with great skill and reconnoitered it myself, and it was a lovely green field. I couldn't understand why somebody else hadn't got it. And the next morning, I found out why. We were right in front of a battery of heavy guns, and every time those heavy guns fired, it nearly blew our heads off. But that's where we were.
Yeah. What was your impression, again, coming now to an armored regiment, with armor, with experience and all the rest of it? What was your impression, as you remember?
Of course, I was seeing very little of the tanks. I was the echelon was full of the wheeled vehicles that supplied the ammunition and the petrol.
Yeah.
And the quartermaster and the like were there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to be frank, I was not much impressed. People were lying around in the place sort of dirty and disheveled, and some weren't shaving in the morning. And there was a quartermaster there who was quite a character. He was a major, quartermaster major, with an MBE for his services. And I was put in charge of it, which piqued him a little bit, and I made these guys shave in the morning and get the place cleaned up, and again, I wasn't particularly popular, but I didn't figure that popularity was a necessary element of military life.
Mm-hmm.
And the major and I ultimately struck sparks in a rather amusing manner. But in any event, after I'd been there about, let's say, a week, or less than 2 weeks.
Oops, excuse me, just a sec. Sorry. You were talking about your the first period you were with the...
Yes, I was not terribly impressed, and did something to sort of sparkle them up, which not surprisingly wasn't very popular with everybody. However, within a week or so, came Operation Total Eyes, which we were discussing briefly over lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And the Fort Garrys were going to make a very deep penetration under cover of darkness, together with an infantry battalion. And the first of the armored personnel carriers, which were old Priest SP guns with the gun removed,
mm-hmm.
were to be the SPs. Were to be the armored personnel carriers.
Yeah.
It was agreed, per the attack plan, that once they had delivered the infantry far forward, they would come back to an appointed rear rally,
mm-hmm.
and there I would pick up something like 10 of them, and I would bring these back to the harbor, would load them with ammunition and petrol, and would be responsible for getting them through the German lines or whatever resistance
mm-hmm.
might exist to rendezvous with the tanks. It being assumed that the tanks would probably be out of both ammunition and petrol by that time. The next morning, went forward to the appointed rendezvous, and the confusion of war was complete, and no armored personnel carriers arrived in the area at all. And so it remained to try and do our best. Numbers of armored personnel carriers were strewn around the battlefield, had been abandoned, some had been burned, some, the one I remember crawling into, had a very dead major from the RHLI lying in it, and what had happened is that the camouflage net had become twisted around the drive shaft, which was exposed because they'd taken the turret off, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing had presumably been hit, and they'd bailed out and left it there, and didn't take very long to cut this camouflage net off the drive shaft, and by then I had a perfectly good armored personnel carrier. And along with a group of men that I had, we rounded up 6 or 8 of these things and drove them back ourselves, and loaded them with petrol and ammunition, ready to bring them forward to the regiment when we got word from them. As ill luck would have it, in the midst of this, the flight of U.S. Air Force B-17s crossed over and in error bombed the Canadians, and one stick of bombs landed in and around our harbor, killed 6 or 8 of my people, and set several of these APCs on fire, and the ammunition going up made very colorful sort of a display. I remember we were outside the harbor cringing in the ditch when down the road, which was the main Confalais road, came a British medical officer with his 2 stretcher bearers, and he was swinging a cane, and he looked down at me in the ditch and said, "Hey there, you, what are you doing?" And I said, "I'm hiding, and you'd better get down here. The next one of those things that blows up will knock your head off. And he said, well, I'll worry about that. Are there any wounded men in that harbor? And I said, there's some dead, and I think there's some wounded. And he said, come along, chaps, and walk right into the middle of this harbor. And in due course came back out with a wounded Canadian. Hell of a brave guy.
I'm good to
have. About that time, we decided that things had sort of quietened down a little bit. So I went in, and one of the APCs was on fire, but not badly on fire. So I decided to drive it out of the harbor. We'd sprayed it with the old fire extinguishers, the tetraethyl lead business. Tetraethyl lead? No, it would be. It's the other stuff. Anyway, it's very pungent when it is heated. And in the process of driving it out, I wasn't the best tank driver in the world. There were a bunch of Polish armored division which had been passing through us on the Confalais Road when these bombs landed. And in the process of trying to get this great armored personnel carrier out, I sliced into the back of Polish staff car that was there. And I can remember after I got the thing off the road and safely to the side, I ran back and was practically sick at my stomach because I'd sliced the back, the whole back off this command vehicle, and there were the body of two Polish officers hanging out the back. And I said, oh my God. And a Polish soldier standing nearby said, do not worry, it was nothing. They were dead anyway. So I hadn't killed them, but I was still pretty shook up. I was also in a state of semi-collapse because of the effect of the fumes. And I remember I passed out in the harbor and thought of this for years and came to with some fellow filming me. And I said, what the hell are you doing? And he said, I thought I was filming one of the dead, but I see you're not dead. And I said, you're fucking right, I'm not. And he or somebody else brought me a bottle of whiskey, which helped me resuscitate myself. And
better than hot warm tea.
Indeed. Later that afternoon, with the remnant of what we had, which I guess was sort of six or eight vehicles, we rammed them through and got to the regiment, where the commanding officer said, oh, you're here. What did you come up? And I said, well, this is what you told me to do. And he said, we don't need any ammunition. We didn't fire a shot all night long, except for some coax. So they'd gone right straight through to their objective.
Yeah.
So all my labors had been for nothing. That substantially ended my tour with the regiment, because within the next day or so, I was ordered to go forward to the brigade headquarters, which had been heavily hit. The brigadier, Bob Wyman, had been shot through the arm. The
yes, he was hit on the morning of the 8th. Yeah. That's right.
So, and then the I think the brigade major, who was Bob Rothschild, was also wounded at about that time.
Could be.
Certainly the G3, whoever he was either wounded or relieved or promoted.
Yeah.
In any event, I got sent forward to the brigade as the G3. I guess I would figure, I don't know what other people would think, but I would think I was reasonably well trained as a G3, except, as I mentioned over lunch, that I had never had any training in wireless procedure.
Yeah.
And pains me to tell this story, but it should be told, I think. We were then teeing up for a very important attack, which I think was the crossing of the Laison River.
Probably Operation Tractable.
Quesney Wood.
Yeah.
And the Quesney Wood was to be bombed by the RAF.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a very big attack. And from where I sat, my brigadier made some classic errors. He decided to form a tactical headquarters, which you can't do at a brigade level. It isn't large enough. He decided to take over command of the net, which is the classic mistake. And he decided to take the brigade major with him in the vehicle which he decided to use as his tactical headquarters. And in the process of taking the brigade major with him, he decimated the brigade staff, which is very small anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, brigade staff consists of, in terms of the operations of the ops room, consists of a brigade major and a G3 and a number of liaison officers. At that time, the liaison officers felt it was their function to go to their regiments. And this is not so at all. The function of the liaison officer is to augment the inadequate operations staff of the brigade headquarters. Next major error, at least in my view, if my memory is correct, and I believe it is that at no time was I ever briefed on the plan. I did not attend the orders group. So far as I know, I didn't have a copy of the orders. And I was, as a brand new G3, was put into this armored command vehicle to do the primary function would be to provide rear link information to the 3rd Division. 3rd or 2nd Division? 3rd, I think. With whom we were working.
3rd, I would think.
And they gave me one liaison officer to assist me. Then the RAF came over and started to bomb, and you know that story. They bombed on the, their target indicator was yellow,
mm-hmm.
and we had yellow smoke to mark our FDLs.
Mm-hmm.
They bombed close in, so the troops threw yellow smoke out to mark their FDLs,
yeah.
and the RAF bombed the yellow smoke. You know that story. So they, in effect, bombed our own people. And the Brigadier's command vehicle then got into a shell hole, and the set went off net, and that was the end of the tactical headquarters. The fellow who was supposed to be my liaison officer saw the bombers coming over, and the ground shook as they dropped their load, and he went completely haywire, and he abandoned the vehicle. So what was designed as the rear link, and I'd like to do some research into this in the war diaries to find out what is really said, but what was designed as the rear link suddenly became the only sort of operational command, except you have in here one person who doesn't know much about wireless procedure and nobody who can work the SLIDEX. Remember the low-grade
yeah.
code we had?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to work SLIDEX.
Yeah. So
it's a rather untidy party, to put it in the mildest possible terms. And I, the best of my knowledge, was in that vehicle for in excess of 24 hours, probably in excess of 36 hours. As far as I know, I had no food, but I'm sure that somebody would have brought me in plates of grub periodically.
Mm.
But I certainly was not relieved, and I had no sleep. And one of the great lessons of the war, as far as I'm concerned, is that fatigue is one of the most subtle things. You know? I can know you and know you to be an intelligent and highly conscientious officer. But if you haven't had sleep for 24 hours,
yeah.
you're not you.
Yeah.
You're just a trap, because your judgment is faulty, your
yeah.
memory is faulty, your actions are illogical. You're just a shell.
Yeah.
And it's so dangerous, because you can't tell, and the fellows who tried to do more than the human corpse is capable of doing cause trouble. Well, suffice it to say that this thing was a terrible, terrible schmozzle, of which I was and am terribly embarrassed. But there's a great lesson to be learned, and the Brigadier Bingham made some terrible, terrible errors in judgment. I suppose he could claim, I'm pleading that it wasn't my fault because I was ignorant of certain things, and equally he could claim the same thing, he was ignorant of certain things.
Well, can I interrupt here for a moment? Where was he? I mean, you say that his tactical headquarters armored vehicle had run into a shell hole or something like that, but you're there for 36 hours. Now, that's a day and a half. What?
I don't know where he was. When I finally was summoned to him, he was sleeping in his caravan in his pink pajamas and was terribly unhappy with me and my performance, which I don't blame him for. I was pretty unhappy myself. But as I explained, I didn't have a fair chance. He'd de-gutted the brigade headquarters, and I had nobody to assist me and hadn't had a chance to, never been briefed on the plan. There was no worthwhile, solid basis for an organization. And he told me again that he was pretty unhappy with me. He told me also, as I recall, that he was being evacuated to hospital with pneumonia. He was evacuated to hospital with pneumonia. After a few days in hospital, he was released and never came back to the brigade. A new brigadier came, so he was relieved immediately following that.
Oh, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought he had the brigade for some time. Now, mind you, you know, I haven't followed this on. Just hang on for a second.
Okay. I'm wrong, and you're quite right. He went off for a few days, and then he did rejoin the brigade. While he was off, another incident took place, again, which bears on the importance of knowing how to operate a brigade. That first was the Quesney Wood operation. The second was the crossing of the Laison River.
Mm-hmm.
This took place a few days later.
Yeah.
And again, one of the battalion commanders, one of the regimental commanders, came forward as acting brigade commander. And again, I was in the command vehicle and had never been briefed on what their plan was. This is the sort of the state of disorganization. And at some juncture during the afternoon, I was a little better organized. I had time now to log the messages and then distribute them. And at one time, the brigade commander, the acting brigade commander, came screaming to the vehicle and said, "You bloody fool, why didn't you tell me about this?" And I said, "Why didn't I tell you about what?" "That you have received code word bugger lugs," or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I don't remember what it was. And I said, "Well, I don't know what code word bugger lugs is." And he said, "You bloody fool, that's the code word to indicate that Regiment A is tied up with Battalion B."
Yeah.
And I said, "So what?" Well, he said, "That's what I've been waiting for." And I said, "Nobody told me." So, not being in the brigade picture, not being due to errors of technique, not being aware of the brigade plan, I couldn't be very receptive to code words that I knew nothing about.
Mm.
Here I was locked in this vehicle, while the brigade major and others swanned around with the brigadier. And he placed me under open arrest.
For God's sake.
Yeah. And so you can imagine how unhappy I was. He subsequently cooled down a bit and released me from open arrest. But I carried on at this extraordinary headquarters through until we got into about Brussels, through Brussels, when I was permitted to rejoin my regiment, which is what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I left the brigade headquarters under a considerable cloud, and I remember now that Bingham did come back and dismiss me, and I was pretty unhappy. Didn't like Bingham very much, as you can imagine.
What kind of a man was he? What did he look like?
Oh, he was thin, quite tall, sort of 6 feet or so tall. I think you'd describe him as quite good. He was a womanizer. I think you'd describe sort of a foppish manner.
Mm-hmm.
Slightly, very much the Anglophile,
mm-hmm.
And English in his manner, yellow gloves, and very much the cavalryman, could recite to you every word out of the field service pocketbook, had a photographic memory, but didn't understand what one word of it meant.
Mm.
Had no, couldn't read a map, had no practical capacity as a soldier. Great capacity for alcohol and a considerable womanizer, but no capacity for command. And a thoroughly, in my book, in my view, a thoroughly amoral officer. Mark you, that's prejudiced. But subsequent events, I think, would...
Is he alive, by the way?
Yes, I think so.
Is he? Yeah.
He stayed on in the Army after the war, got as far as, was reduced to the rank of full colonel,
mm-hmm.
and got mixed up in some sort of a harouche when he was M.A. in Turkey or Greece and was released from the services. However, the point of it is that it was the wrong way in which to command a brigade headquarters. Subsequently, when I'd done some fighting, which is what I wanted to do, and had learned how tanks operate in combat or should operate in combat, I then, much later in the war, was sent back to 4th Armored Brigade headquarters as the brigade major, working under a very, very competent brigade commander, Bob Monsell. And he was constantly on the move, but he was just one other outstation on the brigade net.
Mm-hmm.
And command of the brigade net always remained in the armored command vehicle, where you had more powerful sets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And whenever we were in operations, there was an absolute minimum of 3 people in the vehicle during the height of the operation, myself as the brigade major, and then one officer commanding the forward link, operating the forward link, that is to troops under command, and one officer operating the rear link, i.e. back to senior headquarters and flanking formations.
Mm-hmm.
And I would sit there divorced from the battle, but able with my headquarters to listen to everything that was going on with my headphones, listen to everything that went on, able to switch from one net to the other to transmit if I wanted to. And able to supervise the work of both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Something would come in from forward troops. We are now on report line such and such. And I would say to the fellow in the rear link, don't report that. I'm not sure that they're there at all. Let's wait for confirmation.
Mm-hmm.
And chances are, if you were reading the battle, you'd find out 10 minutes later that was not so. They were not near there.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd wait the required period of time. And it sounds pretty prosaic as I describe it, but it is a technique by which the brigade was commanded excellently, not by me, but by my brigadier, but controlled by the headquarters properly.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a technique and a method of control that my friend Bingham never understood. And had he understood it, the debacles that had taken place during the Quesnay Wood operation never would have taken place. They would have been, well, we might have had some other problem, God knows.
Yes.
But the sort of terrible debacle that we had there would not have taken place, indeed should not have taken place.
Yeah.
These are some of the lessons, at least as far in my view, that I'm terribly afraid that we will lose or have lost in the intervening years.
You never did, or did you ever find out, and I'm particularly interested in this point because I shall be writing about it, you know, in the next, probably take me about a month to get to this point that you mentioned. You never knew what happened to Bingham when he was divorced from you for about a day and a half. Now, that's a hell of a long time. I wonder what you pinned under a truck. Or
we may find that my conception of time is badly out.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to get the war diaries, and if you want, I'll look them up.
No, I have them.
You have them.
I have them at home.
Well, then look up when the attack went in.
Yeah.
And we could look up and find out when Lieutenant Colonel somebody or other from the Sherbrooke Regiment, no.
Yeah.
Can't think of his name. It came from Halifax. Anyway, it took over command.
That would be one of the COs from one of the
three
armed. Yeah, well, that I can find
regiments.
Out. Yeah. What's your? Do you know your brother's telephone number that you're staying at?
No, I don't. I don't have it on me.
Yeah, because you know I could just for the hell of it. No, I can't.
If you give me
tonight.
The phone book, well, I'll be away tomorrow.
Oh yeah, I wouldn't be able to get up for tomorrow. I'm going out to dinner tonight. But
sure.
It's
Alan MacDonald.
Well, better
Alan
still, can I have your address in Ottawa?
Surely.
Because what I'd like to do, I've got to stop this now. The old papers close to an end. But I'll be in Ottawa. I generally go there once or twice during the year, and I'd like to sort of follow this up.
All right.
Later.
I'd be interested in doing it myself.
Yeah. There we go.
I should have done it years ago.
Well, this is one thing I must say that always surprised me about the old Army Historical Section, and more recently the Directorate of History. They don't do it. Now, mind you, memory, as they say, is, you know, you can forget a lot of things,
mm-hmm.
a lot of places, dates, time lags, this, that, thing, this, that, and the other thing, but damn it all, there are also things that a man remembers that you will never, never find written in a war diary or in a message log. Okay.
Here we are.
Lovely. Ambleside.
Ambleside Drive.
Ambleside.
Yep. It's a big, out in the west end of town. There's several big high-rise apartments there and some townhouses around them.
And that's
K2B82.
Right. Got it. There was one other question before we stop I'd like to put for you. I've never served at a brigade or divisional headquarters, but I do have, you know, at home Xerox copies of the operations logs or wireless logs or whatever you want to call them. I'll neatly typed out the time, the serial number, the time to, from, the message, action taken sort of thing on page after page after page of them. Who wrote those out?
In my own experience, at 2nd Armored Brigade headquarters, probably I did. And they would be extraordinarily poor because I was, you know, I was doing all things.
Mm.
In the Armored Brigade, 4th Armored Brigade, when I was a brigade major,
mm-hmm.
The two people did it. The whoever was on the forward link
yeah.
would do it for all messages going out there, going outgoing and incoming.
Mm-hmm.
And the other officer on the rear link would do log all the messages going out or coming in on the rear link.
I see.
By that method, you could be reasonably sure that you weren't missing anything.
Yeah.
Also, the radio operators took them down sometimes. If their officer was busy or occupied on the set or talking to somebody,
mm-hmm.
It was the duty of the operator to log them.
Yeah. I just wondering, you know, most of them, the typing looks fairly good, and I was wondering if somebody would take the originals down in pencil and then have them typed up
yes.
later.
Yes,
yeah.
It would be.
Yeah.
At least in most headquarters.
Yeah.
I think nowadays you'd probably do it another way. You'd probably type them.
Yeah.
Right at the time.
Yeah. Good. Good. Beautiful. Well, I think we're just about ready to go.
Better turn.